Sir Thomas Bertram's unexpected return from the West Indies has interrupted the preparations for the theatricals at Mansfield Park. And Fanny Price is trembling with fear at seeing her uncle again.
Here she is, Fanny, my own dear girl.
Sir Thomas moves forward with a kindness which astonishes Fanny. She does not know how to feel or where to look. His manner seems changed. And all that had been awful once in his dignity is lost now in tenderness.
I am very well, sir. We are all well.
Good. That is good.
We must take tea directly.
And so it was that I came directly from Liverpool, having made my passage in a private vessel.
And how do you think the young people have been amusing themselves lately, Sir Thomas?
My dear Mrs. Norris, I cannot imagine.
They have been acting. We have all been alive with acting.
Indeed. And what have you been acting?
Oh, they will tell you all about
it. The weather, sir, has been incessant rain since October began. I've hardly taken out a gun since the beginning of the month.
My goodness.
For the present, danger is over, and Fanny's sick feelings subside. But it is not long before Sir Thomas rises.
Well, I must go to my study, but I shall return to you all directly.
Where are the Crawfords? Did we not leave them in the theatre?
I believe they have returned to the parsonage.
Then Yates is all alone in Father's study.
Oh, I warned you of the danger, did I not?
Yes, Edmund, you are always right as you see it, and I am always wrong.
So, yes, when he seized me by the breast, a child might have overpowered him.
Sir Thomas, forgive me. John Yates, sir, at your service. I was just rehearsing, preparing my part as the Count in our theatrical performance. A wonderful play, Lover's Vows. We have been quite taken over by it these last few weeks. These are the scenes from the alehouse. We allowed ourselves but four scenes to drop down, even though the play itself demands more. Excuse me, sir. Your arrival was unexpected.
It would seem so.
He's coming.
I had not the smallest suspicion of your acting having assumed so serious a character.
My friend Yates brought the infection from Eccleford, sir, and it spread. Probably from your having so often encouraged that sort of thing in us formerly. It was like treading old ground again.
Now, Mr. and Miss Crawford were mentioned in my last letters from Mansfield. Do you find them agreeable acquaintance?
I do not say he is not gentlemanlike, Sir Thomas.
Mr. Rushworth?
But I feel I should tell you that he is not above 5'8" in height, or you might be expecting a well-looking man.
I see.
And forgive me, but I am not so fond of acting as I once was. I think we are a great deal better employed sitting comfortably here amongst ourselves and doing nothing.
Well, I'm happy to find our sentiments on this subject so much the same.
Fanny watches as Maria, far from enjoying her father's praise of her chosen husband, savours still the sensation of her hand pressed to Henry Crawford's heart.
Sir, I wish to tell you...
What is it, Edmund?
As to the theatricals, we have all been more or less to blame, every one of us, excepting Fanny. Fanny is the only one who has judged rightly throughout, who has been consistent. Her feelings have been steadily against it from the start. She never ceased to think of what was due to you. You will find in her everything you could wish.
Ah, there you are, Fanny.
Sir.
I think you spend more time in these gardens than the peacocks do.
I used to hide here when I was a child.
You were lonely, I think.
I did not mean...
Oh, no, 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 of course not. Come, walk with me. At dinner last night, when I was talking of my problems in Antigua...
Forgive me for asking so many questions.
Oh, you are the only person, apart from Edmund, to ask me anything at all of my affairs. All is changing, Fanny. I fear that in but a handful of years, 10, 20 perhaps, we shall recognize neither ourselves nor the lives we lead.
Then we are in good company.
And tell me, how is that?
We are like the trees you planted in the wood. Every year they seem transformed, but essentially they, like we, remain the same. Rooted, always themselves, despite appearing altered. As you shall also remain, sir. Always your true self, and much loved because of it, despite what the future may bring.
At this same time, Maria is in a good deal of agitation. She desires Henry Crawford to lose no time in declaring himself. She has been expecting to see him the whole morning. 24 hours have never passed before, since August began, without bringing them together in some way or other.
And what of your plans, Mr. Crawford?
I travel from Bath to Norfolk, and then London, and on to York. I may get as far as Banbury today.
Ah.
You are leaving?
Indeed, yes. I must attend to business upon my estate.
Well, a man must look to his responsibilities with his own eyes.
Mr. Crawford turns to Maria, who is struggling to take this news with some degree of calmness. He is choosing to go, voluntarily intending to stay away. This man who has pressed her hand to his heart. Her spirit supports her, but the agony of her mind is severe. Within the hour, he is gone.
Come inside, Maria. Fanny, I did not see you. Come inside. You are cold.
Another day or two, and Mr. Yates has also departed.
Ah, Maria, there you are.
You wish to speak with me, Father?
Maria, I have called you here to make absolutely certain you are at ease with your coming marriage to Mr. Rushworth. I have to tell you, although I can see that Rushworth is a decent man and eligible in all respects, he was not the man I expected to find as husband to my eldest daughter. I'm a little surprised, my dear. And must be reassured that you are entirely happy with the arrangement. Maria.
I am grateful, Father. But I must assure you, I have not the smallest desire of breaking my engagement. I have the highest esteem for Mr. Rushworth's character and disposition, and no doubt of my happiness with him.
And so it is that Maria Bertram pledges herself anew to Southerton, safe from the possibility of giving Henry Crawford the triumph of governing her actions and destroying her prospects. She commits herself to a marriage which will bring both respectability and influence. Had Mr. Crawford returned, or written, perhaps her mind would not have cooled enough to seek all the comfort that pride and self-revenge can give. If Henry Crawford had destroyed her happiness, he should not also destroy her credit, her appearance, and her prosperity too. Maria asks Julia to accompany her on the honeymoon, and with both sisters gone, Fanny finds herself the only young woman remaining at Mansfield Park.
Miss Price! Miss Price, do come into the parsonage and shelter. You will catch your death!
And so it is that not a week later, Fanny is sitting, dried out and well cared for, in Mary Crawford's drawing room.
Miss Price, what were you thinking of? Out there in a positive storm.
You are too kind, Miss Crawford.
You must have some tea to warm you, and a piece of cake to lift your spirits.
Thank you. Oh, what a beautiful harp.
Would you like me to play for you?
Yes, indeed, Miss Crawford, I should like that very much.
Fanny thinks of Edmund, sitting in the very same room, in the very same place. Fanny is drawn to Miss Crawford. She is the object of Edmund's fascination. And Fanny, longing to feel close again to Edmund, finds herself unable to let a day pass without visiting the parsonage.
If anyone had told me a year ago that this would be my home, I certainly should not have believed them. I have now been here nearly 5 months, and moreover, the quietest 5 months I ever passed.
Too quiet for your taste, perhaps.
I should have thought so, but take it all and all, I never spent a happier summer.
Fanny's heart beats quick. She knows very well that it is Edmund's presence that has held Miss Crawford here.
I am conscious of being far better reconciled to a country residence than I ever expected to be. Ah, Mr. Bertram approaches. I'm so glad your eldest cousin has gone, so that Mr. Edmund Bertram may be Mr. Bertram again. There is something in the sound of Mr. Edmund Bertram that is so younger brother-like.
How differently we feel. I find the title of Mr. so cold, it just stands for a gentleman. I should much rather use Edmund's name when addressing him.
Good day to you, Miss Crawford. Fanny?
Mr. Bertram, still bound upon the path of poverty and idealism?
Still holding true to the guidance of my heart, Miss Crawford.
And does this invaluable heart advise you on such mundane matters as to whether the rich are held at a greater distance from God's acceptance than the poor?
Do you have a personal interest in such matters, Miss Crawford?
I certainly hope to be rich. Do not you? Do not we all?
My intentions are only not to be poor.
Be honest and poor by all means, but I have much greater respect for those that are honest and rich.
We must go. Good day, Miss Crawford.
Mr. Bertram. Miss Price. My dear brother, you are arrived home some days early from your business.
Indeed, I saw no reason to remain longer when I might return to my dear sister's side. Was that Miss Price I saw you walking with just now?
It was, and her cousin, Mr. Bertram.
And how is she?
Well.
I am concerned, now that I'm arrived, however, as to how I shall amuse myself on these long country days.
Do you not hunt? Perhaps you may shoot.
But that would only exercise my body. And I must take care of my mind. I think I rather desire to see more of Fanny Price.
No, Henry. You must be satisfied with her two cousins.
Impossible. I cannot be at ease without the youngest of the brood. No, I have thought about it long and hard, and my mind is made up. I need something. Something to amuse me. Something on which to focus my energies. It is my intention to make Fanny Price fall in love with me.